In fact, the track is that of something that I rarely show, because my tongue is actually fast, but then again, it's slow. So yo,
throw it, bro.
This ain't Jigger, a name a tape for niggas.
Who
hear that name, I'll place a trigger to the figure.
It's blue through,
and if you try to rip, I throw a bigger
blue shoe
to you. And if you take the shoe, a nigga dagger will do.
Ooh,
try to the best of the best, but if they try to diss it, quick as a nigga, I'll take a peek to see who was the naughty or nicest. Like ISIS, I'm crisis, plug new mic to it. Come with a D with a I with an S to the S to see who's hype is.
So, I gotta believe this is number 128, Luda Scale. I gotta apologize, you know, better have my donuts, has to apologize for bitching out last week, but there was no work on Wednesday, and there was a nice four-year game and a couple of beers talking to me, so I had to make the responsible choice and stay home.
Was it like the good beer on one shoulder and the bad beer on the other shoulder, like, don't drink me, and the bad beer is like has the horns on and the pitchfork going, like, drink me?
No, there was really not much.
There was
not much resistance. Hey,
there never seems to be a lot of resistance.
You saw I was angling for early podcast that day, so
it's all good. I mean, I had the podcast of my life all ready to go, but you quickly threw a wrench in that.
Yeah, well, I believe in you, so I believe you can come back and make the show even better than what last week was going
to
be.
You don't need to pump. You know, give me a pep talk, dude. I mean, it's usually the other way around. I'm always on my game. I'm in my prime.
I feel fine.
You feel capital?
I feel just capital.
So, let's talk about wrestling, and let's talk about the thing that stood out to me the most over the past 2 weeks, and it has to be, it's, you know, first of all, good programming on all accounts. I still think Seth Rollins getting hurt is a work, but...
What? Yeah. You saw the video though, right?
It's a work. I don't care. It's a work.
But you did, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a work though.
Sure.
Yeah, they just needed to rip things up. But here's kind of the thing. Well, I'm digressing a little bit, but I'm watching these past two shows on Raw going, well, if Seth Rollins wasn't hurt, I mean, what would have they given us? Like, really, like a lot of bad programming and all that bad stuff that usually happens right before a pay-per-view. So it's kind of funny when I'm just kind of looking at this pay-per-view and going, or just looking at these past 2 weeks of programming, going like, man, like they would have been really been hurting if Seth Rollins wasn't hurting. So you like that, huh? Ooh, hey, I tell you, dude, I'm on top of my head. What? I didn't know he was back in. Oh no, was it Doc? I didn't know he was back in town. Oh, Johnny, you may go now. I didn't know you were there. But the thing that stood out to me the most in the past 2 weeks is one Cesaro. That match he had with Roman Reigns. I mean, I'm not going to say that it opened my eyes to how good Cesaro is, but it opened my eyes to how good Cesaro is today as compared to the kind of like the fantasy lore of what Cesaro is. I mean, all the praise that gets heaped on him and stuff with these fans that believe in this like dark horse thing and, you know, conspiracy theories here and there. I mean, he actually proved it. And he's been proving it for the past 6 months. But this was really like a wow moment for me, like watching this match. I mean, he was doing stuff that, I mean, the flip that he did towards the end of the match. And, you know, he made you believe that he had a chance to win that match, even though I knew Roman Reigns was going to win that the whole time. But that, to me, and this is high praise, where it really felt to me that it was as close as it was to like a Japanese wrestling match on NJPW, just with the back and forth and storytelling in it.
Well, even kind of had the little Japanese break in the beginning of the match with the when he kind of leans him when he's leaning up on the lockup on the rope, and he kind of backs off and does like the double chest tap, and that was total New Japan. So I mean, I guess that's one way to look at it, and you know, I don't disagree. I mean, you know, I think Cesaro pretty much delivers whenever he gets a chance. The thing that stood out to me, and I mean, it was on its own, it was a great match. But the thing that stood out...
Is that a match of the year candidate, you think?
I don't know if I would go that far, but I guess it could be. I guess we'd have to start, like, I guess a candidate, perhaps.
It was the earlier match, it had to follow Owens and Neville. And I thought that match was really good too. So it's kind of, you know, I'm looking at these two.
Ambrose and Ziggler was really good too.
Yeah, I'm looking at these two. I'm looking at these two performers in Cesaro and Neville, and they both kind of have like a lot of indie cred. But I cut you off, so I mean.
So you know, I think one of the things that we've been talking, and I was kind of thinking, you know, we might spend a little bit of time talking about Reigns now on this show, but one of the things that we've been talking about as like, you know, he's been getting criticized all the time, and I think the big complaints we had was the booking, right? It's like every single week it's Big Show, Kane, Big Show. And I think we've been advocating put him in matches with guys like this that can work, and you're gonna get a much better match out of the guy. And I think that's exactly what it did. It's a better way of booking, putting in someone that is still, I mean, he's not physically imposing compared to Reigns, but he can stand up to him. But then is also a great worker in his own right.
Well, I didn't like the booking when I first saw the match announced, and even when I was looking at the bracket and stuff. Because I felt that, once again, I mean, yeah, what you were saying with putting him with the Big Show, putting him with Kane, where he can't really succeed. Even putting him with a guy like Bray Wyatt, I think, is just, it's their styles are kind of similar, and they really don't mesh very well. But I'm watching this match going like, well, Cesaro's going to get over, and the fans are going to boo Roman Reigns when they beat him. And I felt it was kind of that way right at the end when I think Roman Reigns put off the first Superman punch, and I thought that was a boo, but they're actually like, it was like a cheer, right? It's kind of like the whole, like, you know, why are they booing Daryl Johnson for? Oh, they're calling him Moose, you know, it's something to that effect. But
oh, because of the ooh.
Yeah, and that's what I was like, oh, great.
Ah, the back of
the throat. He went right.
And surprise, they're alarmed.
But it gave him a chance to shine. I think Cesaro was definitely the mechanic of that match, but Roman Reigns, I mean, the fans were able to get behind him, and I think the fans kind of appreciated a really good match, and it wasn't a case, and I don't want to talk about he who must not be named, but Roman Reigns has enough high spots that are believable and they're impactful, where when he does them, gets really good, the crowd gets behind it. And even the whole thing with his kind of his drop kick to the apron, with the guy's head kind of hanging out or lollygagging around outside the ring, Cesaro was able to turn that stuff around. Cesaro did a lot of things where he reversed a lot of Roman Reigns' stuff, which made it a lot more believable type match. And I think when Roman Reigns made his comeback, the crowd was ready for it.
Yeah, and even like going to that apron drop kick, right? He had the one typical spot that Reigns does where he missed it, but then he was able to come back and pull it off in a spot that is not what he normally does, right? Where Cesaro was standing outside, leaning over, and he pulled off that drop kick. So, you know, I think it shows some versatility in Reigns being able to pull off like his moveset in different situations rather than just the same old move. So, I mean, I think Reigns is getting better, but I think that's exactly what we've been saying, is to get more out of Roman Reigns, you need to be putting him in the ring with guys like Cesaro. And have him putting on better matches that the crowd's going to get into, because just frankly nobody cares about seeing him go against Big Show for the 30th time this year.
I also think too, if you want Cesaro, if you want Reigns to get over, don't do the typical archetype of trying to make the next WWE big thing. A lot of people liked Roman Reigns in the beginning because he didn't talk that much. He was silent but violent. to coin from Chris Benoit, talking about his flatulence problem, but his character worked well, and it's a case where when they're trying to give him too much TV time, or they even like his promo leading, you know, before that Raw was pretty bad, and it was just kind of a thing where it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, you're trying to be funny, it's not really working, this, that, and this, but I don't know. I'm hoping this is a case where the fans can get behind him, because he's one of the few guys. And it's funny, like, we like guys that are typically fans don't like, and then when the fans are supposed to like him, those are the guys we like. And that's kind of what Roman Reigns is. I got PG&E out here real fast, so I'm going to put a little pause to our podcast and tell them that they're all done fixing my pipe, gas pipe, and all that garbage. All right, so with that nice little break, so what did you want to talk about Roman Reigns?
Well,
because I tend to kind of ramble on.
So I think that
you're supposed to say that, like, hey, come on, no, you're doing good.
Yeah, but
hey.
Every time I do that, you know.
Whatever.
I thought about it, and I thought better of it. So I mean, I think that you know, not to go all all Brad Pitt in a Chanel No. 5 commercial, but I think it's inevitable that that Reigns is going to walk away with a belt. But I think kind of the point that you mentioned earlier about, you know, how you were concerned with the booking in this match with Cesaro, how you thought maybe Cesaro was going to get over and it would kind of go counter to kind of raising Roman Reigns' profile here. I think it's going to come down to Reigns and it's going to come down to Ambrose. And I think there's been a lot of talk over the past months that one of these guys is going to turn, and I think generally people think that Ambrose will turn on Reigns. But I think it's probably better if Reigns is the one that turns and goes authority, because I think there's enough people out there that already want to dislike Roman Reigns, and they're going to dislike him whether he wins or loses, and that if you make him a heel, you can accomplish that, and then you go further, let him get hated, and then at some point, I think it'll be easier for him to turn and face after he gets screwed, and you already have people hating him, and they're ready to kind of get on his bandwagon. Because I think what you were saying, the problem you saw with that Cesaro match, is a real problem when he goes against Dean Ambrose. Because people are going to like Dean Ambrose regardless. And if Dean Ambrose turns on him, people are going to be even more, oh, they're shoving Reigns down our throat. And they're going to want to support Ambrose either way. So I kind of think it might be better if Roman Reigns is the guy. I think maybe he initially, like, you know, spurned Triple H's offer or whatever, but maybe when it all comes down to it in the end, he ends up being in cahoots with Triple H, and I think that might be the best way to book it.
Well, it kind of fits the storyline of The Rock, right? Because I think The Rock, it's funny, like, The Rock became the corporate champ at a Survivor Series, mm-hmm. and we're heading into this Survivor Series, and especially with Ambrose's kind of promo that he cut at the end, where he's saying, if it was my WWE, this, that, and this. I think that, you know, I think Roman Reigns turning and becoming corporate is an easy... I think it works both in storyline, but I also think it works corporately as well. I think having a champion that everybody's going to boo is just going to further kind of discredit them in kind of a mass media market. I think when you have ESPN going to all of these, there's the ESPN factor, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to all these pay-per-views, they're reporting on the pay-per-views. They don't want ESPN to say Roman Reigns won and everybody booed him out of the building like they did at the last Royal Rumble. I think it's a way better story where you kind of have the corporation machine of Vince McMahon, the faces of the company of Vince McMahon, Triple H, to kind of be in the reins of Roman Reigns, of his title run. And I really think that it fits the bill both on Triple H's ego that, you know, that isn't supposed to be there, but I think there's a huge ego with Triple H. And I think it's a better story. So, yeah, I could definitely see that. And I don't know if it's a... I think for the development of Roman Reigns' character, I think that's probably a step in the right direction. Even though I don't like what the ramifications are of it in terms of having to listen to Triple H and Stephanie talk for 25 minutes and then... It's kind of following the same thing with what happened with Seth Rollins, where Seth Rollins, for the first 3 months or 4 months of his reign, was just like this corporate entity that really showed nothing, and then Seth Rollins became who he was, and they allowed him to stand on his own. I just don't know if Roman Reigns for the long haul has that type of personality to do what, say, a Seth Rollins did if he turned heel, and I just think he's just going to be one of those guys that he has to be fed a storyline in order for him to succeed, just because I don't think he has a personality, and I don't think the company will allow him to have a personality or explore his personality as well. So what I'm saying is, I don't know if I really see a long-term future with Seth Rollins. I mean, with Roman Reigns, it's always been kind of insinuated that he's going to be the next big thing. But just with what I've seen over the past year and how he's dealt with that, it hasn't been too promising with me.
You don't think he can? You don't see it as him as a heel, or with him as a face, or as him either way?
I think either way. I think he's one of those guys that needs to have. I mean, Roman Reigns didn't get started getting cheered. You know, he wasn't being cheered on by the fans until he paired it back up with Ambrose. Right? He was kind of struggling for a long time, people were booing him, people were cheering him, but they weren't full heartedly cheering him until he paired up with Ambrose and had an opponent in terms of Bray Wyatt. And that's not through any fault of his own. I think the way the structure is of the WWE is that they're not allowing characters that can really develop and really explode onto the scene and kind of be like an unknown entity in terms of how they play out on TV. I think WWE really wants to control their product. I think they really want to control the wrestlers, that they all have a role for them, and I don't think they are going to allow anybody to really kind of explode on the scene or just get this great type of heat, whether it's bad heat or good heat, and really change the industry in terms of what they're packaging on TV. I think they like where they are, and I think it's just there's nobody with any pull that can change the game, if you want to say that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't disagree with that, and I think even more so, that's why it lends itself to making Roman Reigns a heel, because it's going to fall in line with what they want. They want the heel champion to get booed. And if Roman Reigns goes and sells out, it's just going to satisfy... I think it's going to satisfy all the people that want to boo him, and all the people that didn't necessarily want to boo him will boo him because that's what they think they're supposed to do. Yeah, you're right. They're not going to be able to play him the way they did Seth Rollins. If you want to go the quick fix and just say, let's just keep on doing what we were doing with Seth Rollins, you put the belt on Kevin Owens. Because Kevin Owens can go do, he can put in the work that Rollins was doing, and he can hold the mic the way that Seth Rollins was.
This Seth Rollins right now. If they want someone to fill in the shoes of what Seth Rollins was doing now.
Then you go Kevin Owens.
Yeah.
And I think Kevin Owens makes a ton of sense as the authority champion.
Storyline wise, what I'm thinking is that Roman Reigns makes more sense for WWE, because then they can have the Seth Rollins champion they had in the beginning, mm-hmm. that didn't really have any pull, and they can kind of control. And I think that's why I think it's a better idea for Roman Reigns. Yeah. Now, first of all, I would like to see Roman Reigns. I mean, this isn't like my number one preference, but I wouldn't mind seeing Roman Reigns become a face champion and really kind of explore his character and put him out there and let him succeed or fail, or let someone have some type of power besides what we've seen in terms of backstage of what we've seen for a long time. My number one preference is to see Kevin Owens win the belt, because I think Owens, first of all, with the heat that he's generating, I think he's the most deserving out of the four. But I think it's the same thing. It's like, I feel the WWE can't give a belt to someone like that who's over, but is over in a way that WWE can't control and didn't expect.
Right. Yeah, maybe. Floyd? I think that Kevin Owens could do it, and I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think he's just savvy about the whole thing, and I think that if they put that belt on Kevin Owens, he's going to make it work either way. Can you see
like the WWE give a belt to Kevin Owens with someone? I mean, because he doesn't fit the look, as you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but I think also, you know, it's almost December, and this is not necessarily what you would call like a long-term run. This is like putting stuff together to get through like 5 months to get to WrestleMania. So I think if you want to keep the continuity of what most of the storylines are, I think Kevin Owens would take the ball and run with it. And I think that if they make it kind of like a transitional champion, where maybe he only makes it to the Rumble, or maybe he only makes it to whatever pay-per-view. I know it used to be Elimination Chamber. I'm not sure they're doing Elimination.
It used to be Payback.
Whatever the last chance for someone to...
Or whatever, yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Right, but usually there's like a chance for... there's like one pay-per-view after the Royal Rumble where somebody gets a chance to...
I think it's Elimination Chamber.
Yeah. It used to be Elimination Chamber, but yeah. I don't know if it still is. And anyway, like, even if Owens only makes it that long, I think you elevate Kevin Owens, and I think you might... I really think you might, you know, figure out something that you weren't sure that you had.
And I disagree with everything that you're saying in terms of from a corporate standpoint, right? Because if you want to do continuity and keep continuity going, I think your first two choices, number one, is Roman Reigns as a heel, because that's pretty much continuity. It's what they know, right? Having a heel champion that's controlled by the authority, Triple H can can feel like a wrestler again by going out there and trying to be funny and all that stuff. And Stephanie can be annoying as all hell. And it's funny how fast I turned on Stephanie, but I used to like her promos. They kind of get boring now. I think number two would be an Alberto Del Rio, same type of thing, a heel champion that nobody really cares about. And what I'm saying is that Del Rio, what I've seen Del Rio do over the past 2 weeks or 3 weeks since he's been back, has been great. I mean, the guy is one of the most underrated performers out there. But I think Dean Ambrose throws the biggest wheel in the spoke or whatever the hell I'm trying to say. He's the biggest cog in the machine in terms of if they put the belt on him, because it's uncharted territory to have a guy like that, be it even though he's deserving. And I think Kevin Owens is the same way. I agree that Kevin Owens is savvy, but I'm just saying you give the belt to Kevin Owens, and I think that makes the product worse, because if he's just going to be a transitional champion in like the 2 or 3 months, when he loses that belt, everybody's going to be so pissed off of him losing the belt that they can't set the next program of who they want to set up.
Perhaps, but it also could get so... It could be so good that's the new champion, and that's what they roll with.
Not with all the big names that are out there. I mean, not with the Brock Lesnar, not with the John Cena returning, not with the time they put in. I don't know. You know, it's... Kevin Owens, I think, is the perfect guy to be champion, because he's must-see TV. You can put him on anywhere. He can carry 4 or 5 segments if he wants to, and he would make the show better. But I just don't think WWE. I think they're in their own little bubble, and I don't think they don't know how to deal with that. They don't know how to deal with someone with natural charisma, because it's too much work for them to figure out a show based on that.
I mean, it could. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's. We're doing more like fantasy booking. We're like, this is what I think they should do.
I don't want to do fantasy booking.
No, but that's what this is. More. We're saying what we think they should do more so than what we think they are going to do. But
no, we're not doing that. I mean, what we're saying is we're not doing that. We're breaking down everybody. You're saying how good Kevin Owens could be. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, yeah, you know what, you're right. But you know, this is the problem with WWE. We're taking these four guys and breaking them down, to see how they'd be dealt by the company if they became champion. That's not fantasy booking.
All right, fair enough.
Don't bring our product down, dude. You know, I mean, we're at a higher level of wrestling podcast here.
Yeah, it's totally different. So
totally try.
I think Owens, you know, I think he may have really shown them something in that run. I think the run that he had with Cena may have been a little bit unexpected, and I think it may be enough for them to see, hey, there's potential here. There's something we can do here. And now you look at the two guys that WWE leans on the most, in John Cena and Seth Rollins, aren't there right now. There's an opportunity there. And, you know, and not that I'm saying that I want this to happen, but it also sets it up for when John Cena comes back, like there's a history there between those two guys. I'd be pissed if it ends up that Owens goes out and drops the belt to Cena right when he comes back. I think it's a direction you can go in. So
yeah, I think that's an easy solution to do as well. And yeah, I think it would garner a lot more interest, you putting Kevin Owens and John Cena back together. But then it's also going to be a case where I don't watch wrestling for a month after he drops the belt to Cena. So, you know, I don't even want to bring Cena up in this whole thing. But, I think the finals are going to be Roman Reigns versus Ambrose. And I think that the best thing, instead of talking about Kevin Owens and wishing for Kevin Owens to do it, I think the best thing would be to put Roman Reigns as the heel and set Ambrose up as the face and see it go off. Here's the one thing, though, and I hate to say it, but you know, you talked about the Dolph Ziggler and Ambrose match. I didn't like that match too much. I mean, I thought Ambrose's match is kind of boring to me. You know, it's just kind of 3 or 4 high spots. I mean, he had some nice spots. You know, they climbed on top of the post and they both fell down. Roman Reigns and Ambrose, or Seth Rollins and Ambrose, did that with the steel cage match. So it's kind of the same thing. I thought Dolph is Dolph, right? I mean, Dolph sold as all hell. I mean, he just has that trick knee. You know, you sneeze on his knee and he can't walk after that. So
him and Brodus Clay, right?
Yeah. It's like, so you know, Brodus is calling him. I mean, Diamond Dallas Page is calling both of those guys and saying, "Hey, try my yoga because it'll change your life."
Yeah.
I wasn't too thrilled about that match. I thought it's just a match I've seen over and over again from Ambrose. I think Ambrose, I don't know. It's kind of the same thing where I say Reigns' personality is better suited for a faction. I think Ambrose right now, in terms of the story that he tells in the ring, he's better suited as a tag team wrestler or a six man tag. I just don't think right now he can do a singles match that's interesting.
I wouldn't go that far, but I do think that it would make the least sense for him to be the guy to join the Authority.
Yeah, but the main thing is that I don't want to see, we're talking about Reigns, if you're going to position Reigns, I don't want to see a Reigns and Ambrose match. I just don't think
it doesn't mesh well.
Yeah, it doesn't.
They work good as a team.
Yeah, yeah.
But going against one another.
Yeah, and the thing is, the Ambrose and Ziggler match, the last 5 minutes, I mean, it was good. I mean, it was intense because the high spots were coming out. But it's maybe it's just a case I'm not patient enough. I think maybe if I see 2 months, if Ambrose really has 2 months of really working on a singles run and working in the ring, I think he can succeed, and I think he can put on a better match. It's just, I think he's had a case too where he hasn't had really good matches to work with.
Right. Well, and I think he's a guy that doesn't get talked about as much, but I think that the WWE has, I think they have big plans for him at some point down the line, and I think they just kind of have him in a holding pattern. So I don't think they put him into great situations because they know that it's a small spark that it would take, a small spark of a push to give Ambrose before that thing would grow out of control.
No, I disagree with that as well. I think that I think when Ambrose got really hot right after the Shield disbanded, I think they tried to greenlight him to a top position, at least top middle card. That's when he was having those promos and he was like acting all crazy, like talking outside of a door or something like that. It's when they had the blizzard and stuff and everything. I think there was like a 2 to 3 week run where they tried to kind of put him in vignettes he would have
promos.
Yeah, certain parts during the show. I can't believe I don't know whatever the hell I'm trying to say, Dean. But I mean, it's hard for me to say that Ambrose doesn't do a good match. I'm still rebounding from that. But I don't think they know what to do with him. I don't think they know his character. It's a case where,
he's an
X factor.
Yeah, you can't define his character, and as what you're saying with this corporate structure of trying to control everything, that's a hard character to just say like this is the direction it's going to go in and not divert, right? And I think that's part of it. I think that's why they have him in this kind of holding pattern where they don't know. There's going to be some point where they're going to push him to the ceiling and it's all going to work. But I think they're afraid to do it too soon or at the wrong time.
He's the CM Punk right now. I mean, he's most akin to what a CM Punk character is. I think Ambrose really holds himself back in terms of what his personality is. I think they asked him to be a certain way, and he plays that very well. But he's just one of those guys. I mean, if you gave him a mic and said, go for it, he would say a lot of things, and he did a couple digs. It was protected digs at the company. Less talking and this, that, and this. But you give him the mic, I think he would surprise a lot of people what type of promo he could cut. And I just think that WWE doesn't want that right now. I mean, they don't want a guy that is so over with the fans that they have to give him mic time. They have to allow him to have a say in what the program is going to be. I don't think they want to do that right now. And especially looking at a guy like Dean Ambrose who's been in the company for maybe, at least in the WWE structure for like 3 years. I know he was down to development, but I just don't think they want to give a guy like that freedom to be who he really is and get so over that they can't control him and he starts dictating what the show's supposed to be. And the sad thing is like that's when wrestling is at its best, right?
Is that the CM Punk effect?
I think it's the CM Punk effect, yeah.
There's like this kind of fear that somebody's going to become the next CM Punk?
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Because the whole thing is they don't need a character like that anymore, right? They have no competition. If it was the Attitude Era, they would seek guys out like that, right? Guys that are trying to plant their own flags and who they are. They don't need to do that anymore. And I'm not saying the product is better or worse for it. I've enjoyed the product for the past probably 2-3 months, even with Cena in it, right? So I'm not. It's a different product now. I'm taking it for what it is, and it's an enjoyable product. It's just you're always kind of like, well, what, you know? It's the you're talking about fantasy booking. That's the fantasy booker in me, right? It's like I want Ambrose to be this hot character that says exactly what he wants to say, and I want a guy that I'm going to watch every week. And Seth Rollins gets hurt, and that's kind of a, you know, that's a guy that's minus one guy. Kevin Owens, of course, is another one, and then Sasha Banks is probably third, and then you have New Day that's four, and New Day is totally, what they do is exactly what WWE wants them to do, right? And it works, and mm-hmm. They have good acts, even though it's not like my type of wrestling.
Yeah. Well, before we divert too much, we really briefly you touched on how you like what Del Rio is doing. You know, what do you think are his prospects going forward here into Survivor Series?
Well,
I mean, obviously he's going against Reigns.
But. Yeah. I mean, my main thing is what I like. I like that what's his name is back along with him.
Zeb.
I think Zeb is good for business, and he's good TV. What I really like though is Swagger's coming back. You know, like the Swagger's kind of interfering with those matches and stuff. And any chance I get to see Jack Swagger where he doesn't have to fit a certain role of what, you know, he has no gimmick attached, and he can just be himself and wrestle a guy like Del Rio that puts on good matches with anybody. I think we got so used to Del Rio, right? We got so used to seeing him like week in and week out that we never really appreciated what he could do. And what he does is that he elevates other performers, and he wins, and you hate him when he wins, right? And that's kind of the thing. When he first came back, everybody's cheering him, and the next week that he comes out, they're trying to make him a face or a heel. I'm like, well, why are they making him a heel? Like he has all this great heat.
See, I don't think I think that's one of the more interesting things with the storyline is I don't think they've really established him as a face or a heel yet. So I don't see that. Like,
oh, I mean, he's definitely acting like a heel in the ring though.
Yeah, but. They're generally booking him against other heels, and Zeb's. I think the.
No, I mean, he's faced Kalisto. He's faced Neville, right? And he's faced like some.
The first week, I think he went against a heel, and the second one, I think he went against someone that was gray, but perhaps like leaning towards heel. I don't know. I think they've been nebulous in. I think he's been pretty great, is what I'm saying. I mean, I think the seeds are there. I mean, I'm pretty sure ultimately it's going to be heel, but I think they've left it pretty gray to this point.
No, I think he's a heel. I think he's a heel all the way. They've been playing him as a heel.
But Zeb, like if you look at Zeb's promos,
yeah,
they're not really heel promos.
Yeah, and then that's kind of where you're kind of going. It's positive, yeah.
No, but I mean,
pump the positive. No, I know. But I mean,
like they posit-
bring out Swagger and
they,
stuff during the match.
Yeah, but is Swagger really a face? I mean, Swagger's pretty great. He hasn't been there long enough.
Swagger's non-existent.
Yeah, he hasn't been there enough to establish himself. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So and you know, I don't want to get all political here, but if they're going to like make him just be like this heel, I would think they'd want to be attaching him to kind of like. Kind of a more divisive political climate that we have rather than going against that, right? So I don't know. I think he's a heel, but I don't think they've really shown him as fully entrenched as a heel right now is what I'm saying. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to beat Reigns, but I think he's an interesting character in this thing. I think he's a guy that they needed somebody with the injuries like that you could plug right in and he could be viable, and I'm glad that he's back. All right, one more, because I think this thing looms as well. Chances that Sheamus cashes in.
I think it's a. I don't. I don't know. I think before this tournament, I was thinking, oh yeah, Sheamus. It doesn't matter because Sheamus is going to cash in anyways. But with everything we just talked about and kind of what's been going on in terms of just kind of like this past Raw with Triple H kind of getting FaceTime and talking to everybody. I think it doesn't make sense. I mean, I'm trying to look at it from a corporate aspect. It doesn't make sense for Sheamus to win the belt right now. It just doesn't. I don't know. I mean, I really kind of look at Sheamus and kind of see him as a guy that's going to fail to cash in. you know, he's going to cash in, and he's going to lose. He's going to lose.
Right.
And whether that he could do that. He can do it now. He can do it at this pay-per-view where he tries to cash in against Roman Reigns, and Roman Reigns overcomes and establishes himself as even more, because the whole thing is that nobody likes Sheamus. So if Roman Reigns becomes a Superman by being Sheamus, and you can have Cole spew vitriol toward me as a listener, saying how great Roman Reigns was and how he overcame. And
I don't think that'd be vitriol, but continue.
If he gives Roman Reigns the John Cena treatment, which will make me spew vitriol.
Okay, there we go.
Thank you. It takes time, baby. But yeah, it doesn't make sense right now for Sheamus. To tell you the truth, I don't even understand why they ever gave the Money in the Bank to Sheamus.
I don't either, but I just think that looms, and I think when you're coming through a tournament like this, and especially the way Sheamus got bounced like really quickly in this tournament, I think I'm not saying he's going to walk with the title. I think you're right. I think he's more likely going to be a guy that tries to cashes in and doesn't succeed. But I think he's going to try something at the pay-per-view for sure. And that could even be where Triple H comes in and saves Roman Reigns. And that, you know, there could be all sorts of different possibilities.
Oh, you can throw Ambrose in there as well, or whatever you want it to be. I mean, yeah, it's whatever. And the whole thing is that you could even, like, Ambrose could save Roman Reigns from Sheamus, and then you'd set up, like, two faces fighting each other for the belt, right? And it can kind of be that whole... And see, that's, to me, that sounds the most perfect, like, what they're going to do is, like, you have two faces fight each other, nobody really gives a crap, and then that's going to be programmed for the next, like, month and a half. You're just kind of going, like, oh, God, here we go.
Or, I mean, I don't know if they'd want to do the same type of finish as they did Mania, but maybe Sheamus inserts himself into and make it a triple threat I hope not too. I'm just saying that I think in some way, shape, or form, Sheamus is going to get involved with his Money in the Bank briefcase.
So what I want to talk to you about is a couple things, and I'll let you. It'll be like dealer's choice or player's choice. First of all, Kalisto, the run that he's had, and Ryback, with the lack of run that he's had, and Ryback jobbing to a lot of people. Which way do you want to go?
I'd rather talk about Kalisto than Ryback. I mean, I think Ryback's quite possibly the least interesting character on that roster right now. And I was glad to see Kalisto win that match, and I think they did it the right way. It was believable. But the whole thing was believable. And with the super Selena Del Sol, was probably what you would be the right name for it, but the way he transitioned into that work, it wasn't like, you know, I as well documented here, I have no particular love for the exploits of Rey Mysterio, and how he used to go beat guys that were much bigger with all these moves that were completely unbelievable that he could pull off. The way that they did that spot, I thought it was totally believable and it worked.
The best thing that's happened out of this Kalisto kind of singles mini run that he's had was I had an Austin Powers moment where I was going, like, who knew Liberace was gay? So when I heard Kalisto speak English, I'm like, that could speak, he can speak English, so he knows speak Spanish.
so he's Italian, the way he dances.
But yeah, I mean, Kalisto being in that tournament, it gave me, you know, because I'm looking at these brackets going, like, man, who cares? I'm like, Kalisto's, I'm like, what the hell is Kalisto doing here? I'm like, oh great, you have Ryback, you have Kalisto, who cares? But he kind of brought that kind of underdog story, and I felt that he did it really well. I mean, the promo's not so much, but just the story that he told in the ring, I wanted to watch a Kalisto match. And
you already like Kalisto, though.
Well, I mean, I liked him with him in terms of what he did with the Lucha Dragons, and then to see him do it in a singles run, and to see another good worker. I mean, it's funny, you have all these guys, you know, you have guys like Neville, you have guys like Kalisto, and it's funny, like Neville and Kalisto. Two small guys that rely on high-flying moves, but Neville's really limited in what he can do because he always has to do that flaming arrow or shooting arrow, whatever that stupid thing is called, where Kalisto doesn't have to go to the top rope to do a finish. And I think that adds a whole different type of storytelling to his matches where, you know, Owens and Neville is a really good match, but the guy went up there like four times, right? And I mean, how many times are you going to go up there and miss your shooting arrow? I mean, what the hell is that thing called? And it... But I thought that Neville and Kevin Owens mapped out a good match where it wasn't where I was going like, oh god, like what a bad finish. It was a good finish. I think it's just kind of silly. He goes up to that top rope every 5 minutes and he misses every single time. Once he goes up there for like a third time and misses, he's like, yeah, there's no way he's going to win, right? And you knew Kevin Owens was going to win. But then you look at like a close-up match and you look what he did with Ryback, and it was a little bit staged, the finish. It was fine. But the everything before that worked really well. And then his match with Del Rio, to me, that was a really, I wouldn't say a perfect match, but it was close to it because it was the same thing. Like, you didn't know who was going to win. And I thought that, I mean, coming in, I knew that Del Rio was going to win. But watching the match, you're kind of going, okay, you know, this is a good match. And you kind of forget about who's going to win and who's going to lose. And you watch the way Del Rio positions himself to win. I don't think that stomp should have been a finisher, but
I got a little bit of the way
it was positioned.
I got a little bit of problem with that stomp, man.
I know you do. You have a prejudice against it.
Yeah, because the guy has to totally pull himself up and hold himself there, waiting for Del Rio to stomp him. I have no problem with the impact of that stomp creating a finish. Because yeah, if Del Rio comes down with that much force straight down into the guy's chest. Yeah, which isn't
the case because that doesn't happen, right? And it's basically like one of the most contrived moves ever.
Exactly. It's extremely contrived that once he locks the guy's leg and the guy has to pull himself up and just sit there staring like, are you going to come and stomp my chest, Daddy?
I'm not dead yet.
so I have a problem with that. I don't know. You mentioned that and it got me going, but.
But you know what I mean, though. I mean, the match was good.
Yeah, yeah.
It was back and forth, and he missed the first stomp, and in order for him to get the second stomp, I thought it was okay. You know, I mean, I it was believable. If it got pulled off, like if it was pulled off 100%, it would have been a good finish. It was probably about 80% that they pulled it off, and it was believable. I respected what they tried to do.
Fair enough. Did you have anything more in depth to say about Ryback if I had chosen door number two?
The only thing is that he was on Stone Cold's podcast, and I kind of got to, you know, because when he came out with the Nexus, I think me and you looked at this guy and said, hey, this guy, he can be something within the parameters of the group. I have no love for Ryback. I think his character is pretty bad, but you know, listening to the Stone Cold podcast, I'm not going to give it too much away, but I mean, it's worth a listen. And he definitely has, you know, he definitely wants to do things the right way in terms of what he wants to do with the company. But it's kind of the same thing. It's like what the biggest thing I got out of the whole podcast was that, well, who's his predecessor, right? Like, he wants to replace a John Cena, and he wants to do it the John Cena way. It's like, well, that's not going to work, dude. I mean, you know, John Cena is just one of those guys. It's kind of, how do you say it? It's kind of like, you know, I'm trying to make it, so when people try to say John Elway is like the best quarterback of all time, right? And that's what they're trying to say about John Cena, right? And it's kind of like, well, first of all, everybody puts both these guys on a pedestal. They really haven't done anything in terms of, you know, okay, Elway's had two championships, but the guy was like the biggest wimp ever. Like, he was like the biggest crybaby. He didn't know how to lead people. And I think towards the end of his career, when he actually matured, he actually started doing something. But everybody just loved this kid so much. And I think it's kind of the same way with Cena, too. And what I'm saying is that Ryback has to emulate what John Cena does. And it's just a flawed system.
Yeah, I mean, I heard Ryback a little bit on Jericho podcast before, and he's actually like as a guy, when you just hear him talking, he's not unlikable. I just don't think he has the talent to do anything as a singles wrestler. And yeah, him as the muscle somewhere, him as him playing like if you were playing like the Eric Rowan role in the
me personally, do I get to wear the mask?
Ryback?
No, you said the Rowan role, right? Eric Rowan?
Yes, I think if Ryback were playing like the Eric Rowan role in the Wyatt family, that could be something that worked, right?
I like Rowan. It'd be the other guy. The other guy freaks me out, dude.
No. Strowman?
Strowman, yeah.
Well, But either way, like
I just want to see Ryback with hair like that, you know, have grow his hair and have it all crazy.
Yeah, maybe not, but I'm just saying, like, that type of guy where he doesn't have to talk and he can just be physical and imposing, that's the height of what Ryback can do. Not ever going to have any kind of major title run as a singles wrestler, I don't think. That's just my opinion on him. But it's not like I wish any ill will towards the guy. I just don't think he's particularly good.
Well, here's the sad thing about the complex that I have in terms of watching wrestling. He's lost like 3 or 4 matches in a row, and seeing how he's losing a lot now, and not a lot of people are behind him, I'm actually starting to like it a little bit. You know, that's a joke.
Okay, I thought you were serious there for a minute.
He's drunk. So we haven't done this in a while, but I'm thinking we're going to go back to the golden mic. And this is the part of the show where
not to give anything away, but I'm seeing how you got this queued up.
This is a rusted mic.
I'm curious how it could be golden.
No, this is a rusted mic, and
that's what I'm saying.
This was brought to you by One Cardboard Icons. He recorded this off his TV, so I don't know how the audio is going to be. Mm-hmm. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed, but you will hear a Cardboard Icons laugh. And Cardboard Icons, if he ever does another podcast, like he did a podcast on the Yahoo Sports one, mm-hmm. and he's a happy guy. He likes to laugh a lot, so you're going to hear a little bit of laughing, but this one definitely was laugh-worthy, so let me see if I can cue this up, and let me see if this will actually work, and I'm killing time, so I can fix my volume with my slow computer. You're going to hear a little pop, and there we go, and so let's see if this happens.
Well, there you have it. AJ Styles used Naito as a stepping stone. A stepping stone to becoming, again, the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. I think it was loud and clear, if not by Yoshitatsu, that the Styles Clash is the most devastating finisher in all of pro wrestling. It doesn't matter who it's on. You get hit by the Styles Clash. I am the master and the innovator of the Styles Clash. So it doesn't matter how many times you try to counter. I have a counter for every one of your counters to get you right back into the Styles Clash. You never know when the Styles Clash is coming. But you know when it's over. I am the best professional wrestler in today's world of professional wrestling. I am the best. No one is better. I am part of the most elite group in pro wrestling. We are the Bullet Club. I am not the leader. We are a unit. We are the Bullet Club. We don't have a leader because we follow no one. If I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times. We don't follow anybody. Now, if there's any questions for me, I suggest you hurry up and ask them. Because my back is killing me, and it needs to be iced. Because that's what warriors do. They go in there, and they get in the ring, and they defeat who's ever in front of them. I'm a warrior, but at the same time, I gotta put some ice on my back. Because I was in a battle. Despite what some might think, I know how good Naito is. Naito is one of the best, better, I wouldn't say the best, because I'm the best, better professional wrestlers in New Japan. So I will take my lumps, I will take my bruises, I will take my back pain, and I also will take the win, the 1, 2, 3.
He didn't say he was going to take his ice. And I also take my ice.
I think he
said... The number one reason why this guy's not in the WWE right now is right there.
I think he said Styles Clash one more time than Allen Iverson said practice in his famous rant there.
Styles Clash. We're talking about Styles Clash. Clash?
When I put the Styles Clash, and you can't get out of the Styles Clash, because the Styles Clash is the most devastating move in professional wrestling, in the world of professional wrestling. A lot of repeating going on in there.
Well, I'd like to see, I want to see if AJ Styles could, be a singer. And, you know how, singers have, they need to have a little, gift basket when they come into the dressing area and stuff. And one of them would have to be, ice. Ice, so he could ice his back. That's what Warriors do.
Not like the Derek Jeter gift basket.
Not the Derek Jeter gift basket, no.
Because that's not what Warriors do.
That's not what Warriors do. Warriors just leave and ice their back when they're done.
I mean, he couldn't even figure out if he was supposed to, like, be arrogant or be giving credit to Naito.
Yeah.
Like, one of the best. I can't say one of the best because I'm the best. He's one of the better. I was out there in the ring.
If I said it once, I said it 1,000 times. There's no leader of the Bullet Club. You only said that once, bro.
because we don't have any leader because we don't follow anybody.
I mean, there's a lot of holes. There's a lot of holes in the Bullet Club. Let's just say that. I mean, I think you know Carl Anderson and his partner
Dark Gallows.
Dark Gallows. They're really good. I like seeing Cody Hall in this week's at NJPW. Omega, Kenny Omega, that guy is terrible. I mean, and that guy is horrible. And
let's not talk about before we go on. Then, I mean, I thought this was one of the rare episodes of New Japan where the opening match was the match you wanted to see, and it was a great tag team match. And even though
had your boy in it,
Shibata. Yeah. Well, that's kind of my team there. And, you know, I was disappointed. I kind of knew it was going to happen. I was disappointed that they didn't even defend the belts one time. But that was a hell of a tag team match. Back and forth. I thought Goto showed really well. And you know, and similar in the ways of that match he had with Ishii where, you know, but like when it's him and Ishii, they're pretty
Shibata cool. Or Goto? Or?
Goto. Yeah. Ishii. That one that slugfest, yeah. Right?
I always get Ibushi and Ishii mixed up sometimes.
And, because, you know, Ishii's small, but, like, he's short yet stout.
Yeah.
he
went in your house and didn't come
back
out.
He went inside the ring and didn't come back out. Like, Goto had to go power against Carl Anderson and Gallows, who are both, like, a lot bigger than he is. And, you know, I thought...
You got to give me a reprieve, man. I'm thinking of the thought alone made my temperature boil.
You thought to yourself she might still be loyal.
Okay, go ahead.
So...
Look around the house and where the hell are they?
Went to watch New Japan at work, had a hard day, running around the ring saying, where the hell are they? I just thought the match worked really well, and, like, I thought the thing that was really good about it was, like, when you watch enough tag team matches and you see kind of, like, the ebb and flow of a match, and then there was all these times where it's, like Bullet Club would isolate one of the guys, they'd do something pretty devastating and toss one of the, either Goto or Shibata.
It's mostly Goto.
And then they'd work Shibata over, and then right in the point where you think, okay, they're going to get him, like, the other guy would come back in just enough, and then they'd start having a flurry, and then Bullet Club would isolate somebody, and then they'd work him over again. And there was all these maybe 3 or 4 points in the match where you thought, this is the time when Mei Tag is going to come back and you know, steal this win. And every time they just got thwarted. And I just thought, like, I know, just from reading on, like, Wikipedia, I think I had a pretty good idea what the result was going to be. But I was on the edge of my seat the whole time trying to figure out, like, who's actually going to win. And there was, like, 4, 5, 6 times where you thought it could have ended. And it just kept going. I thought it was a great match.
Well, I knew from the beginning that Bullet Club was going to win. Not because I knew beforehand, but I just with the way that match was, I'm just going, like... Bullet Club has too much heat, yes, and they're the top two performers in the Bullet Club are these two guys, are Gallows and Anderson, as compared to who? I mean, listen, the AJ Styles, he's good as a singles, but I mean, in terms of what the bread and butter, I mean, it's funny, like, Carl Anderson is the Bullet Club. Yeah. I mean, he just like Arn Anderson was the Four Horsemen, this guy's the Bullet Club. Mm-hmm. What I really liked about that match was. I actually like Shibata a lot in that match, and I like what Shibata and Goto did in terms of their tag team moves and the moves they did for the fans' approval and the oohs and ahs from the fans. But the last 3 minutes of that match is just back and forth and you know, false finishes here, you know, false finishers here and there. But what I really liked was that Shibata for like 20 seconds just waylaying both these guys, right? Just like, you know, you're thinking like, he's going to win the whole thing on his own, which he can because of the amount of respect they have for him over there. But of course he gets stopped. He takes the pin and he loses. And, it really just shows like the guy should have, I mean, this is like the John Cena moment, right, where he's going to overtake two guys. Even like the CM Punk moment where he's going to beat these two guys by himself. And if he would have done it, that would have been totally believable. So what he does is that he starts doing it, and then he gets turned off, he gets the finishers put on him, and then he takes the pinfall, which to me speaks more volumes for what Shibata is. This is the match where I think I'm starting to... I've respected Shibata, but it's a case where him kind of losing, really, to these guys is better for the company, and I think it really showcases, Karl Anderson and Gallows. And so I have a lot more respect for him now than I've had for him in the past, where I really felt that he was always kind of... The thing that bothered me with Shibata is that he beat Nakamura, right? And so yeah, so that's the problem. So it's been a slow. He lost to Tanahashi in a match I really didn't care about, but I respected the match itself. And then he does the job for these two guys, and he's the guy that takes the pinfall, and it really opened up what Shibata can do in my eyes. And they showed him the proper respect by giving him that big old flurry where he was just dominating, and Shibata then turned around and did the job for these two guys.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, That was my favorite tag team match in a long time, so that I really liked.
That's a match of the year candidate as well.
It's possible. I mean, I think
nothing's going to beat Nakamura and Ibushi, right?
Yeah. Yes. Did you want to say any more about how much Kenny Omega sucks, or did you want to just leave it at that?
I don't know what else I can say. There's so many things. No, I don't. Kenny Omega sucks, and he sucks.
Taguchi's kind of.
Oh, Taguchi sucks too. God. And that guy, I mean, just give me a break, dude. I mean, it's just two gimmicks gone wrong, right?
Right.
And they're heading for a clear crash course. And instead of elevating that division, it really just kind of shows that as much as I don't know, it's kind of a slap in the face, I think, for like good workers everywhere, right? Because Kenny Omega can be a good worker. The other dude who I don't even bother knowing. Was like Sunshine Pants or whatever his name is. What's that stupid gimmick he has on? What's his name of his on his the back of his trunk?
The funky weapon.
Yeah, so, yeah, whatever that is, right? I mean, just who cares, dude? I mean, it's gimmickry at its worst, right? I'd rather see the time splitters, and
well, Kushida's great in the ring.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like I don't know why. I mean, you have two guys that can they can be something, right? Kenny Omega can be something. I mean, he has like a heel look to him. I mean, he kind of has, the gray hair works for him and stuff. And the other guy can be like this kind of like fan favorite or whatever it was. But it was just bad.
I agree. Yeah, gimmicks gone wrong is a pretty good description of what that was. So, yeah, I thought it was one of the few times where, like, it's almost every time I watch New Japan. It's like you watch the first match and you're like, yeah, that's a really good match. And I know the next match is going to be better. It's one of the first times where I watched that first match, and I was like, this is great. And then I saw who the next match was, and I'm like, well, I mean, I guess I'm kind of pot committed here, but yeah. I'm not really expecting much, and it lived down to my expectation.
It delivered to your lack of faith.
Exactly. All
right, so let's do this real fast. Let's bring this back, and I don't think we've ever put this in, but we're going to do a Hall of Kayfabe, and this is where we kind of pick guys or personalities in wrestling that... never kind of get their just due. Some of them do get their just due, but it's kind of guys that we grew up watching and kind of shaped our wrestling watching career. This is going to go in our announcing wing. And I can't believe we haven't put this guy in yet, but maybe we have. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think Gorilla Monsoon definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Kayfabe. And why don't you share some of your many memories of this guy?
The monsoonisms is probably the best way to put it, but I mean, he had so many like quotable lines, and then I just think for me and like us, it's funny because I mean, he's more like our parents' generation, and so like the sayings that you hear your parents say or older the people of that older generation, like he would always be saying them, and like it's completely lost on like the youth of today. A lot of those sayings haven't made it down, but it's just funny. I don't know, because I think I was always blinded to think of how good Gorilla Monsoon was, and then in recent years, like some people kind of said, like, well, Monsoon wasn't really that good, but I think that just Monsoon and Ventura, they played off each other great, and Heenan and Monsoon played off each other like so well also, so like.
He was a straight man for both those guys,
yeah,
right?
He was the Ed McMahon, right? And there's another skewing old, yeah. uh, But yeah,
we are old man.
Yeah, you know? But he was the straight guy, and then Jesse Ventura would poke at him or
will you stop?
Yeah. But the thing that I think is funny to me is like, I always know him as that kind of that straight guy and that jovial kind of person, but sounds like backstage he was kind of an asshole at certain times. And
I think everybody's an asshole backstage. Sometimes. Yeah, I've heard from backstage people too that he was one of the nicest guys around too.
Right, and
very generous and.
But that, and also that in his actual wrestling career, he was just this monster heel, which I always kind of find like, you know, his personality as a broadcaster, as a broadcast journalist, was completely opposite from what I think his character was, because he was supposed to be like a scary monster heel.
Well, I think he fought he didn't fight Muhammad Ali, but Muhammad Ali charged a ring one time and Monsoon put him in an airplane spin on the shoulder and spun him around a little bit. He was also in line to take over the company, right? It was between Vince McMahon, I believe, Awful Alfred Hayes was probably in the mix, and then Gorilla Monsoon as well. I know it would have been, I don't know who it was, maybe it was Pat Patterson and Alfred, or not Alfred, but Gorilla Monsoon, but Monsoon was in line to take over that company, and Senior gave it to Junior and pretty much guaranteed that Monsoon would always have a job at WWE. But, you know, I don't think he was a bad announcer. I mean, was he as storied as Gordon Sully? I mean, I think if you listen to Gordon Sully now, you'd be like, man, I mean, if you personally were, I know for a fact, if you sat down and listened to Gordon Sully, you'd say that the guy sucked, right? I mean, he wasn't your style of announcer. He's just an old throwback to what announcing was supposed to be. Monsoon, I really felt that he was, I mean, he was the main announcer for one of the most popular eras of WWF, you know, history. And I think, you know, when we don't remember so much, we remember the wrestlers, but what we remember the most, and even when we think back to that time, is that it's Ventura and Gorilla Monsoon just riffing off of each other, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Jesse was the best with Gorilla Monsoon over anybody else. He had some good ones with McMahon too, but he was better with Gorilla, just because because he had two guys that knew wrestling and could talk wrestling, right? And Jesse would bring out the wrestler and Gorilla Monsoon in terms of the way they called it, and Gorilla Monsoon knew what to say to get Jesse going off on a tangent or whatever it was. Yeah, it's scripted, but they knew what they wanted to talk about. And you know, as a kid, I really kind of understood the value of getting proper prenatal care, because there were so many miscarriages of justice that I saw. I saw a miscarriage of justice like 4 or 5 times a week.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's like, you know.
Yes, especially when the irresistible force would meet the immovable object.
Yeah. And some of the other stuff, the excellence of execution.
Did he coin that?
Yeah, he coined that, yeah. He's excellence of execution. And that was for, and I think back to it now, if I was Hitman Hart, I'd probably get pissed off at that too. I'm like, come on, dude. But there's a lot of other ones too, like just, Brutai, and
yes.
Yeah, which spawned one of the mini characters of Bruiser Barber Beefcake. That was a low point for Bruiser Barber Beefcake right there. Like, well, what's your character going to be? Hey, why don't you guys call me Brother Brutai? So, Gorilla should have got the trademark for that, but great catchphrases, and, you know, House of Fire. Jim Powers, a House of Fire, is one that I always remember. I'm like, really, dude? Jim Powers is the House of Fire? So, just overall, it's like, it's kind of one of those things where it wasn't, you weren't ready to watch wrestling until you heard him like get on and start doing a broadcast and stuff. And I think he's definitely underrated as an announcer. And I think he's one of the best of all time. Not that there's a big, vast people, set of people. But.
So you've ranked him ahead of Schiavone.
Yes.
I don't know if this makes any sense or not, but it's like, as much as like ribbing that like Ventura might give him, it always felt like it's like you could feel the respect level that Ventura had, and like there was a line that he wouldn't cross about going personal attacking him that, like, you know, you don't get from, you know, not trying to compare him to the modern broadcast team, right? But like, you know, now they kind of, I think they look to go after each other here and there. And Heenan was always ready to go after somebody. But for whatever reason, it seemed like, you know, Jesse might, you know, make fun of him for being old or
I don't think he ever did.
Not old, but just in like, you know, he couldn't see because of the Coke bottle, yeah. The Coke bottle glasses are a little too glassy or whatever. But like he it seemed like as much as Jesse Ventura was all about like insulting people, like he never really went there with Gorilla Monsoon, and is like. Like, you know, they go at each other, but you also knew, like, they really liked each other. Or yeah. You got that feeling from when they announced together.
Well, what made him so good is because, so that's like the cheap way, right? That's cheap heat to go after the announcer personally. Ventura would go after Gorilla Monsoon of what he said about the match. And then they could go back and forth and, like, argue. But it never got personal.
It never devolved.
Yeah, it never devolved into personal. And the whole thing was that. I think what you're trying to say is that Gorilla would say something that all the, you know, that baby faces everywhere, like the baby face fan, like, yeah, you're 100% right. And Jesse knew that he couldn't cross that line and totally like just debunk like the cash machine of whoever he was talking about. But he would sit there and stew for like 5-10 minutes, and then out of nowhere he'd go like, well, girl, you said this, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, Jeff's a few. So they start to argue with me again.
I don't know how we haven't brought this up, but I think the prime example of this is the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time, Pat Patterson.
What a relic he was.
Will you stop, Jeff?
The best one was you, the best thing is like me and you would like we'd spend the night at each other's house and stuff, and we'd try like make each other laugh or something, and I'd like walk by and go, Pat Patterson, what a fucking relic he was. It still makes you laugh to this day, dude. Yeah. So let's finish off with that.
The honky tonk yeah. man's the greatest Intercontinental Champion ever was. Not in my estimation, Jesse.
Listen to the fans talk about Santana. Yeah, they're all saying Chico. So do you know what that move that called Gorilla? What is that? The flying jalapeno. Oh, will you stop? So Musco number 128. We got my big boy over here, Bet at my donuts. I am Bad News Ramen, and we will check you out next week.
The naughty or nicest.